Anybody love Jesus here this morning? All right. I thought you might. You know what I love about this church more than anything else is Jesus, right? I mean, you guys are okay, but Jesus is the head of this church, and I love the fact that you love him as much as you do, and we have the opportunity to come here Sunday after Sunday and worship him together, and I'm so thankful for that. And I'm also thankful for what God has been doing in the life of this church over the last year or two, how he's been drawing people to himself and how he's been changing lives and how we've got to witness that, right? How we've got to see people get saved and baptized and see their lives turn around and changed. And I don't know about you, but that's exciting to me. I get pumped up when I see other people find Jesus. And I think that's just how God has wired us, because when you have something that good, you want to share it with other people, namely, we have Jesus. Amen. And so some of your leaders here from the church had the opportunity yesterday, as Wes already said, to go to this Revive conference. Why do we go to that? Well, one, we understand that God is not finished with us here yet at Belmont, that we are just getting started. Yes, the church has been here for 116 years, but we're looking forward to the next 116 years and what God has in store for us. And we think that it's going to be really, really good. And we're going to see a lot more people come to know Jesus and walk with him as his followers. But we also think, we don't even know what it's going to look like yet, honestly, but we also think that God is going to use Belmont to continue this work of revitalization, to help other churches who may be in a similar situation to say, you know what, maybe your neighborhood's changed, maybe the church has changed, maybe the times have changed, but God is still God, Jesus is still on the throne, and he can still help turn churches around. And so we went to this conference yesterday to learn about more about not only how we can continue to grow and be changed, but also how at some point in the future, Belmont could help other churches to be revived, to be replanted, to have a fresh start, so that more and more people could come to know Jesus. And so the keynote speaker at the conference was Dr. Blackaby. That's this young man sitting right over here, and he's going to come up in a minute and give us a word. And it was just really great to hear everything that he was sharing, namely that we still got to keep going back to Jesus because he is the pastor of the church. And so we want to go back to him and see what it is that he wants us to do and then obey, even if it's crazy, even if it doesn't make sense to us. And so Dr. Blackaby travels around, he speaks, he writes books. In fact, he's writing a book right now. He's actually finishing up this morning before I picked him up. So hopefully we'll pray about that today, that he'll get that knocked out maybe on his plane flight home. How about that? But if you would, could you join me in welcoming Dr. Blackaby with us today?
Well, it is good to be with you this morning in this wonderful church. It's what a delight. Probably one of the greatest privileges I have is just to be able to travel around the world and around America and just drop in on God's people and so many different communities and cities and places. And it's always good to see where God is working. And I'm really encouraged to hear what God's been doing in this church. And I agree with you, the pastor. This church has had a great history, but with God, the best days always lie ahead. With God, it's always the next thing he has for you. It's always exciting. God's never done with us. God always has something else. And I have a sense that God has some wonderful things in store for this church in the days to come. And I'm so glad you're a part of that and that you're going to get to witness what God does. I want to just share with you a little bit of a journey that God has put me on of late. I go around the world helping people learn how to grow, how to go deeper in their walk with Jesus. If they're just barely starting or whether they've been walking with Jesus for 50 years, there's always more of God that they could experience. And if I looked at my own life, if I were real honest with you, I would have to say that I have not grown as a Christian consistently throughout the years. I wish I could tell you that every day I became just a little bit more like Jesus. But the fact is that there are days, there are even weeks, maybe even months, dare I say even years, where I've been basically the very same Christian. I started the year as this kind of Christian, and I ended the year the same kind of Christian. The way I was praying, sometimes the way I was praying 2-3 years ago is exactly the same way I'm praying today. The same things I'm trusting Jesus for today, maybe the same I was trusting him for 10 years ago. And I don't believe God wants us to do that. I believe God wants us to keep going deeper in our walk with Him. That it doesn't matter if you've been walking with Jesus 60 years, there's still more of Him for you to experience. And what we don't want to do is ever become satisfied. And so sometimes God will, He'll shake things up. That's what He's done with me. Sometimes God gives me a difficult experience, and it awakens me that I can't stay where I am. Sometimes God gives me a great experience. Maybe God, a preacher comes in and says something, or the pastor shares a text from the Bible, and it just, the Spirit of God grabs me and says, this is for you. And I realize I've got to go with God. I can't stay here anymore. Probably the last time that really happened for me in a real significant way was just over 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I had a life-changing experience, and that was when I became a grandparent. Now, I suspect there are a few grandparents here in this room, and I was always told that being a grandparent was a good thing. But I just figured, you know, I've had lots of great things happen in my life. That will just be another one, but that's fine. But then 3 years ago, in a matter of 15 days, I went from having no grandchildren to having 3 grandsons. I went 0 to 3 in 15 days. I just believe go big or go home. And so, and I'll never forget, it was a Saturday morning. I'm away from home a lot of Saturdays, but I happen to be home on this Saturday, and I get a call from my son, my second son. He said, Dad, we're on the way to the hospital. The twins, they're on their way. And I don't know what happened in that one phone call, but it was as if I went brain dead with just one phone call. I couldn't believe what was happening to myself. Here we are having this lazy Saturday morning. We're just getting out of bed, and all of a sudden I get this call, and so I hollered at my wife. I said, Lisa, the twins are coming. Get in the car. We've got to get to the hospital. We're half-dressed. We haven't even had breakfast or coffee yet. We run and get in the car, and I realize I don't have my keys to the car. Wait right here. I ran back in the house, got my keys, came back to the car. I don't have my wallet. Wait right here. It took 3 trips just to get all my stuff so we could back out of the driveway. We're backing out of the driveway, and I realize there's no gas in the car. It's just completely empty. I said, Lisa, we'll never make it to the hospital. I've got to stop and get gas. She said, well, why didn't you fill the car up ahead of time? I said, Lisa, these babies have come 2 weeks early. Today is ahead of time. I was going to do it. That was on my plan, my list today, this Saturday, to fill up the car. They've come. They beat me to it. And so we swerve into a gas station. I jump out, grab the first nozzle I find, and there's a cover over that nozzle. There's no gas in that tank. I have to get back in the car, pull up to another one. By the time we get out of there, we're just racing along. And I said, listen, now don't get upset. But we left so quickly, I haven't even had coffee yet this morning. I haven't had breakfast. And those poor innocent children, their first sight of me should not be me without coffee in the morning. It will terrify those innocent children. There's a McDonald's right there. I said, we won't even go inside. We'll go through the drive-thru. We won't even come to a complete stop. I'll just slow down and say, we need coffee and oatmeal to go. We're having a baby. And so we pulled in and just slowly going by. And they said, well, just pull over to the pickup area. We'll have to get that oatmeal out to you in just a second. And so I won't even tell you what my beloved wife is muttering to me at this point, but we pull over and we're waiting. Finally, they bring it out to us. We squeal out of that parking lot, racing over to the hospital. I finally see the H. I've never been to this hospital before, but I kind of know where it is. And we see a big H up above this big building. I swerve into the parking lot. My wife says, don't even park the car. Just drop me off at the front door. She said, those children are going to be in kindergarten before I see them at this point. And so I pull up to the front door. She gets out, runs into the building. I'm trying to find a place to park. And I notice out of my rearview mirror that my wife has come back out of the hospital. So I swerve around and roll down the window. She says, this is the wrong hospital. Like, we've literally gone to the wrong hospital. It's an affiliate of the right hospital, but they don't do babies at this one. And so we've got to go a mile and a half further down the road. Now we get into the hospital. We race up to the maternity ward. I race up to the nurse at the desk. I said, I'm Richard Blackaby. I'm the grandfather. Where do you need me? And the nurse looked at me and said, we need you in that room right over there. I assume they'd want to get me gowned up and gloved up and have me in some strategic position in the birthing process. And they said, no, we want you in that little waiting room over there. I discovered later that they have a much larger waiting area for the normal people that are waiting, but they could tell I was going to be trouble. So they're putting me in this little room by myself. And so my wife saw no reason to wait there when there's a perfectly good gift shop just one floor below. So she goes down there.
I'm in a room by myself. There's a TV playing with 24-hour news. And of course, you know, if you watch the news, what I'm seeing, it's telling me about terrorists who have just blown themselves up at a wedding and killed dozens of innocent people. It's telling me about violence and shootings and corruption and scandal and all kinds of negative news. And as I'm watching this news, waiting to meet my two brand new grandsons, I realize this is the world that my grandsons have just entered. This is the world they'll have to navigate their innocent little young lives. And after a little bit, they said, now, one of the twins was back in my daughter-in-law's hospital room. We could see them now, one of them. And so my wife and I, we race up to that room. And I'm very good to my wife. I treat her very kindly most of the time. But there was only one baby, and there was two of us. And I'd never held a grandchild before of my own. So we both sort of raced in. I just kind of stepped in front of my wife and made a run for that baby. She fell into a bedpan. I grabbed the baby. And I held up this beautiful, brand new little baby. But of course, I've just watched all the news. I've seen all these bad stories about what's going on in the world. And as I'm looking at this child, I realize that there's going to come a day when the world's going to come after this boy. Pornography is going to come after this boy and try to ruin his innocent heart and mind. There'll be a day when he may be in school and a teacher will laugh at the very thought that God created the universe. And there'll be a day when his friends will laugh at him for trying to have a moral stand that no one else believes in. And God just quietly said to me as I'm holding this child, and what kind of grandfather will this little boy need? So when the world comes after him, the godliness of his grandfather, the prayers of his grandparent will protect him and hold him in place. And God is a God of grace and truth. And in truth, God said, Richard, you're not yet the man of God this little boy needs you to be. But you could be. You could be. And God said, let me help you become the kind of man that this boy needs you to be. So when his teacher says, there is no God, well, that little boy say, I've heard my grandfather pray and talk to God. I know there's a God. And when his friends say, why don't you do that? Everybody does that. May he say, my grandfather's a Christian. And if that is what it looks like to be a Christian, then I want to be one too. And so I began a journey. I began to say, God, then do whatever you have to do in my life. And if there was just one truth I would just leave with you this morning, it's this. When you stop growing as a Christian, when you stop growing in your walk with God, people will suffer. People will suffer. If you just say at some point in your life, I've been a Christian for all these years. I think I know what it's like now to be a Christian. There'll be people who'll suffer because you'll never become the man or the woman of God that God intended for you to be. I want you to see in a passage. Oh, by the way, before I end there, let me show you these little three little boys that came on that day. These are the grandsons. The two outsiders are the twins. They came the day I described. And then 15 days later, the boy in the middle came, Everett, and so his cousins, his 15-day-old cousins, came to see him. And then just go to that. You go to the next slide there. I've got a fourth grandson. This was taken in October this past year. I keep that picture in my Bible, and the reason I do is because every time that my alarm goes off in the morning at 6 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning, it's time to get up and have my quiet time. It's time to try to become a stronger Christian. And I think, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to do that. I'm too tired today. I think of these guys. And I think, well, if you won't get up for yourself, will you keep growing for them? Because I don't want them to suffer because I got lazy as a Christian. I don't want them to go with it. I don't want to look them in the eye and say, I'm sorry, Grandpa, can't pray for you. I just never learned how to be a prayer. I'm sorry that I can't help you find that answer in the Bible. I just never was all that good at Bible study. I don't want to look them in the face and say, I'm sorry, I can't be of help to you, because I just never became the man of God that God wanted me to be. Folks, you can't stay where you are. You have to keep going. And that if you're just a brand new Christian, maybe you're not even a Christian yet. Folks, you can't keep living apart from God and be a blessing to the people around you. maybe the first step you got to take is, you know what? I've been dancing around this being a Christian for years. It's just time I settled that, because my kids, my spouse, my friends, they're never going to get all they could from me as long as I keep playing around with whether I'm going to get serious with God or not. Maybe you've been a Christian for 50 years. But boy, I tell you what, the last 30 has been pretty well all the same, doing the same things, praying the same way. And maybe it's just time to say, you know what, I think there's still more. And if there's more that God has for me, I want it. Because, folks, you can't give to others what you don't have yourself. So the single greatest thing you can do is just keep letting God fill up your cup so you've got more and more to give to other people. I want you to see what this looks like in the Bible. And in Matthew chapter 17, there's a powerful story about the disciples. And if you know the context of this story, Jesus has taken three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, up onto the Mount of Transfiguration. But he's sent nine of his disciples into a nearby village, and they're supposed to be ministering. And so they're ministering to various people, but apparently at a certain point, a father came running up to these nine disciples, and he told them about his son. His son had an evil spirit, and in the middle of the night, that spirit might come upon the boy, and he would go into convulsions, and he would fall into the fire there that was being kept going during the night, or he might fall in the water. And this poor distressed father never knew when this spirit would come on his son. And so he's gone everywhere trying to get help, and nobody can help his son. Everywhere he goes and tells people about his problem, the people always say, your problem is impossible. There is no solution for you. And then one day, this man hears about that nine of Jesus' disciples are in his village. And he runs to them and he tells them about his little boy. But these disciples say the same thing everybody else has said. Your situation's impossible. And so now Jesus has returned to the village. And we pick up the story in verse 14. And it says, when they reached the crowd, a man approached and knelt down before him. Lord, he said, have mercy on my son, because he has seizures and suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire and often into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they couldn't heal him. Jesus replied, you unbelieving and perverse generation, how long will I be with you? How long must I put up with you? Bring him here to me. Then Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of him. And from that moment, the boy was healed. Then the disciples approached Jesus privately and said, why couldn't we drive it out? Because of your little faith, he told them. For truly I tell you, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will tell this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Folks, when you read this story, it kind of catches you by surprise, because when Jesus looks at his disciples, he says, oh, faithless and unbelieving, perverse generation, how long must I be with you? When you read that, you think, wow, I've never heard Jesus talk like that. I've never seen him get so upset. And it appears he's talking to his own disciples. How could he be so upset? And I think what happened is this. These disciples, if you read the beginning of Matthew chapter 10, Jesus had given all of his disciples the power to set people free, the power to help people who were in need, who were broken. And he sent them out, and each of his disciples apparently had success in the past. But on this day, when a little boy was brought to them, I kind of suspect that when these nine disciples saw this little boy coming up, they probably thought to themselves, I've cast out evil spirits from grown men. I can handle this little boy. This ought to be easy. And the first disciple tries to set him free, and nothing happens. And I can imagine maybe Matthew coming up and saying, well, Thomas, you just must have doubted. You must not have had enough faith. Let me show you how I do it when I cast out demons. But Matthew doesn't cast it out either. Philip gives it his best shot. Andrew does all he can. Maybe all nine disciples try to free this boy, and every one of them fails. Folks, can I tell you something? My own experience and everything I've ever seen testifies to this truth. There will come a point in your life when you will come to the end of yourself. You may have had lots of success in the past, but inevitably, you're going to get to the end of yourself. At some point in your life, you're going to face a problem that's too big for you. It happens to everybody. Nobody is immune to that. I don't care who you are. It may be a doctor's appointment, and suddenly you're told something that's bigger than you. Might be you lose your job, and you've always been able to have a job, and now you don't. And suddenly you're at a place where you've never been before, and it's too big for you. That's what happened to these disciples. On this day, they faced a problem that was too big for them. And folks, when you face something bigger than you, you've got two choices. You either let God grow you, so now your faith is big enough to handle the problem, or you quit, or you give up. And the disciples had chosen to give up. They walked away. Do you notice when Jesus arrived, that it wasn't the disciples who ran up to Jesus. It wasn't them who said, "Oh, Master, I'm so glad you arrived here. We got a really tough problem over here. But we told the Father not to go anywhere because we promised him before the day was done that he'd be set free." They don't do that, do they? They're conspicuously quiet. Because I think this is why. I think the disciples had given up. The disciples just wanted to walk away. And folks, I'll tell you something. There's never any more hopeless situation than when the people of God give up on someone. Can I tell you, that's why I'm really proud of you as a church? Because you're surrounded by people that are broken and hurting. And the reason this church is here is to tell those people, with God, all things are possible. You may have gone against some of the worst things in your life, but we're telling you, you've never faced a problem yet that God's not bigger than your problem. That's the message of this church. And that's what these nine disciples were supposed to be doing, but they gave up. Folks, if I were to ask you, how big is your God? If I were to say, how powerful is your God? You might tell me of a statement of faith that you believe. You might say, well, God's all powerful. He created the universe. But if I really wanted to know how powerful your God was, all I'd have to do is find out what you've quit, who you've given up on, what you've given up on. Maybe you had a bad habit in your life, maybe an addiction, and you tried and tried and tried to get over that, but you always ended up failing. And finally, you just quit and said, I guess I will always be this way. Maybe you had a hot temper that would wound your spouse and would wound your children, and you hated that, and you kept trying to not be that way, but no matter how hard you tried, it seemed like something would set you off, and you'd say another unkind thing. Finally, you just shrugged your shoulders and said, I guess everybody around me just has to know I'm always going to be this way. Or maybe you had a broken relationship. Maybe you haven't talked to your parents in years. Maybe you haven't talked to a sibling for years. And you tried to reach out. They didn't want anything to do with you. So finally, you just said, I guess it's impossible. Maybe you had a prodigal child, a prodigal grandchild. And they walked away from God, even though they grew up in church. And you tried to reach out to them. You tried to pray for them. But no matter how much you prayed, no matter how much you tried to reach out, they just kept running from God. And finally, you just shrugged your shoulders and said, I guess they'll never return. Folks, when you quit, when you give up, what you're saying is even God could not fix that. Even God is not strong enough for that. Think for a moment in your mind about who and what you've given up on. You used to try. You used to pray. You used to make an effort. But when there was no success, you finally just thought, it's just not going to happen this side of heaven. And you walked away. You see, I think what Jesus saw was nine of his disciples sheepishly just quitting and walking away. And Jesus stops them and looks at, and sees this little boy writhing and bondage on the ground, and Jesus is saying, you mean you're just going to walk away? You mean you're going to just leave this boy like this? Nine of you, the disciples of Jesus, are giving up on somebody? Do you understand? If you give up on this boy, this family is toast. They're hopeless. It's awful. Don't give up on people. That's what Jesus was saying. And the disciples came back and said, well, why couldn't we cast it out? And Jesus, he doesn't say it's impossible. He says, because of your unbelief. If you just believe. Now, what he's saying is the belief you have right now is not enough. Your faith has to grow. The level you're believing right now, the kind of Christian you are right now, is not going to cut it. Your faith in God, your Christianity, has got to go to another level. If it goes there, it won't be impossible. And Jesus sets it free. Folks, I got to tell you, I've been there where I've come to the end of myself. And I grew up in a preacher's home. I have a PhD in theology. I've read lots of books. You would think, I mean, you know, what's going to be impossible? But folks, I'll tell you something. I've led lots of things in my life. When I was in high school, I was the captain of sports team. I have been the president of schools and pastor of churches. And I if I were just real honest with you, I would tell you that in my work life, I don't think I've ever had a problem in my job that I could not solve. But you know what? There have been times in my own home where I just did not have a clue what to do. There have been times in my own family where I cried out to God and said, this seems impossible. At work, I was like Superman. And I'd come home and all of a sudden I'm just a wimpy Clark Kent. I mean, I just can't do anything, it seems. And I remember one day I was at the office and I was working on stuff and working, solving problems, and all of a sudden I get a call from my wife. She says, Richard, can you come home? Our son Daniel, the son who gave me the twins, he's about 15, and he'd gone through a real difficult time in his life, difficult time at high school, and he gave up. He said, I'm done. I'm not going back to school. And he's in his bedroom, all upset, doesn't want to talk to anybody, but he's just said, I'm never going back to school again. Now here I'm solving all these big problems at work. The last thing I want to do is have to go home and convince a 15-year-old that he can't just drop out of school. Well, Lisa, can't you fix that? No, I've tried. We need to bring in the big guns. We need Dad to come home. So I left work. I go home, and I'm trying to think, well, how would I solve this? Well, I solve problems all the time. I can do this. I'll put on the charm. So I walk in. Hey, Daniel, sounds like you've been having a hard day today. Hey, that's all right. I mean, we all have hard days. We can work this out. No problem. He's not buying it. He's not letting me charm him. So I thought, well, I'm a problem solver. I'll use my problem solving technique. That always works at the office. I said, well, tell me what your problem is. Let's put it on the table. We'll fix it. It's okay. I fix problems all the time. That's what I do for a living. I can fix this. But my son doesn't want me to fix him. My son doesn't want to be a problem that I fix. He just said, Dad, that's not going to work. It's not that simple. So I thought, well, I'll let him know the scary implications of dropping out of school. I said, son, if you drop out of school, you won't be living here at my house, and you won't be just sitting down in the basement watching TV. He's not scared. He doesn't care. He'll take his chances. So I resort to outright bribery. What do I have to pay you to get you back in school? I mean, I'm desperate at this point. Nothing's working. He can't be bought. And finally, I did what all fathers do when there's nothing left to say. I said, well, you will go to school tomorrow because I'm your father, and I said you're going to go to school. And I closed his door. I walked out of his room, walked over to my bedroom, and I thought to myself, that was the worst display of parenting I think I've ever done in my life. And I had no doubt whatsoever my son was not going to school the next day. And that son wanted nothing to do with his father. He just wanted me to be away from him. I realize I've done everything that has always worked for me before, and nothing is working now. I was at the end of myself. And the problem was, it would be one thing if I failed at work, but I was failing with my own son. And I was the only dad that he had. So if I fail my only son, he's got no other dad to turn to but me. I realize I can't get this one wrong. And so I remember going into my room, I leaned back against the wall, and I prayed. I said, God, what does that boy need? Have you ever prayed for someone and what you prayed was, God, would you please fix that person? God, just fix that person. They're so messed up. Just fix them. I said, God, what does that kid need? But see, the problem with asking God a question, you have to be ready for God's answer. And what God said is he needs a different father. Because the father he has is not getting the job done. The father he has, he doesn't even want to talk to that father right now. He doesn't care what that father has to say. So if you're going to keep being that kind of dad, you're going to keep failing, just like you have today. And so I prayed a very scary prayer, but I said, God, then do whatever you have to do in me. But help me learn how to help him. And I'll tell you what, I had an older son. The older son kind of took after me, so he hadn't been that hard to raise. But the next son, Daniel, took after his mother. And so I should have known there was going to be trouble right from the start. I just couldn't parent him the same. You've probably never said this to any of your kids. You've never said, why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you be like your sister? If my kids would just adjust to me, that'd be fine. But God would say, no, Richard, you're the one who needs to change. You've got to change. You can keep being the same dad you've always been, and you're going to keep getting the same results you're getting right now with him. And so I said, God, do whatever you have to do, but change me. Change me. Make me the dad that this boy needs me to be. And I'll tell you what, it's a long story, but God I started doing stuff with that kid I'd never done with any other of my kids. I started reaching out to him in ways I'd never done with my daughter, my older son. And step by step, God began to mend our relationship. God began to show him. And I never forget one time taking that son with me to San Francisco. We're just going to go and do some stuff together and watch some sports and different things. And at first, he was real suspicious. He really wasn't that interested in being alone with me anywhere. But we went on a little trip, and I kept wanting to fix him. I kept just saying, you know, like, good, we'll have a chance to have some heart-to-hearts. Well, I'll fix this son. And God kept saying, don't do that. See, I see a lot of Christian parents, we focus more on raising our children than we focus on enjoying our children. And I just trying to raise my kid was a problem I was trying to solve. Not a gift from God that I should enjoy. And God said, just enjoy this son. He's actually an awesome individual if you get to know him. And I remember at the end of that couple of days with that one son, just the two of us, looking into his eyes, and he's laughing, he's smiling. And I think it took about 3 days before he began to realize maybe his dad wasn't just a total disaster. Maybe there was still something good in me. And you know what? 3 years ago, it was that son who called me up on a Saturday morning and said, Dad, the biggest day of my life's about to happen. I'm going to become a son, a father of two sons. And Dad, on my biggest day of my life, I want you to be there. Dad, get down there quick. I want to share this day with you. I thought to myself, I'm so glad that I didn't stay where I was. If I had that same relationship, if I said that's just the kind of dad I've always been, I don't know that my son would have wanted me anywhere around the day he had his two twin boys. But by God's grace, God didn't leave me where I was. And because of that, I got to experience incredible joy with that son. We still have just an awesome relationship today. But it's not so much because God changed him, but because God took me to a place I'd never been. Would you be willing for God to take you to a place where he's always wanted you to go? I had a young husband came to me one day. He said, well, Richard, you just have to understand, I've just never been a prayer. He said, my wife is the prayer. My wife prays in our family. I've just never been very good at that. I said, so are you telling me that every day your wife gets up in the morning and prays for you and prays for God to bless you and protect you and guide you and provide for you? He said, yeah, it's awesome. My wife prays that for me every day. I said, well, who prays for her? He said, well, I've just never been good at that. I said, so that doesn't sound like a very good deal to me. She gets up and prays for you every day, but because you've never been good at prayer, you don't pray for her. So she goes without being prayed for. I said, I've got a simple solution for you. Learn how to pray. It's not rocket science. You don't have to have a huge IQ. You just have to decide, do I care enough about the people around me for me to grow and become the prayer, the man or woman of God that those people need me to be? Don't look your wife in the eye and say, I'm sorry, you're just never getting prayed for. I was just never good at that. Well, you're not good at it because you've never worked at it. You've never tried. You could get good. Let me just close by just telling you, my dad is the greatest man of God that I know. And about 2011, we wrote a book together, and it was on spiritual leadership. And we wrote this book, and we were asked to speak in a conference. And there's about 2,500 people in a conference. Most of them are pastors, church leaders, and everybody's there to hear my dad because he's the greatest man of God many of these people have ever heard. And so the last night, my dad says, Richard, I want to switch around. He said, instead of you going first, I'm going to go first. I'm only going to speak for a few minutes. Then I want you to take most of the time. And so I said, Dad, and he said, then I want you to have an altar call where people can come forward and draw closer to God. That they can say, God, do a fresh work in me. Take me to a place I've never been with you. But most of the pastors have been pastors longer than I've been a minister. They're all older than me. I said, Dad, nobody's going to stay around and have me tell them to get closer to God. They they've been pastors for years. They're all church leaders. They've been Christians longer than I've been alive. He said, well, that's what I want you to do. And really the hardest part was, how do I tell people, get right with Jesus when the greatest man of God I know is sitting on the front row? I just thought, Dad, that would just be so hard. But he told me to do it. So I preach. I get to that point. I said, folks, now as we close this time, if you would like to say to God, God, I don't want to keep being the same Christian I've been for the last number of years. God, I know you've got more for me. I want it. I want that to be in my life. I want to be able to have more to give my kids and my grandkids than I've ever given them before. If you want to say that, I said, then you just come and kneel here and just pray at the front. And so the music started playing. At first, nobody is moving. And I didn't really think there would be, so I'm just kind of waiting this out while I go home. And then I notice over to my right that there's one person is moving. One person is on their knees over here just praying. I thought, well, one person, I guess that's better than none. I kind of glanced over to see who that person was. It's my dad. And I remember thinking to myself, he's the greatest man of God I know. What is he doing on his knees? Why is he coming forward? And it was like God just said, well, Richard, that's why he is the greatest man of God you know. Because every time there's an opportunity to draw just a little closer to Jesus, he's always the first guy to get out of his chair and get there on his knees. Because if God's got something more for him, he wants it. That's why he has so much. He's never been content just to stay in the same place, being the same person. And so, folks, when we invite people just to draw near to God, it's not for the worst sinner in the room. It's just for people who say, I want more of Jesus than I've got right now. I want to go to a closer place with God. So as we would just close this time this morning, can I invite you just to have that same opportunity? There's some spaces here. If people just like to kneel for a moment here at the front at a step. If all you want to say, one of the reasons that I like to do this is because a lot of times in church, we come to church and we sit in our comfortable pew. And we sit and we listen to some wonderful truths out of the Bible for an hour or so. And then when we walk out the very same people we were when we walked in. No different. We pray the same. We believe the same. We're living the same. And sometimes when we just sit in that comfortable pew, it sort of symbolizes that we have become comfortable Christians. And sometimes the best thing that could happen to us is to get a little uncomfortable. And so sometimes the way you get uncomfortable is you get out of that comfortable seat. You take about 10 steps forward. You get on your knees. You say, God, do a fresh work in me. Do a fresh work in me. And so can I just invite you? We won't take long. We'll be done soon. If you'd like to draw near and say, God, I want to be that person who goes closer to you than I've ever been. And as a couple, maybe as parents, you might say, for our kids' sake, we've got to go closer to God. Then just come and say, God, just take us closer to you. But no more excuses. No more excuses about that's how I've always been. I've never been good at that. Well, ask Jesus to help you be good at it. So you come, and I'll just give you a moment just to surrender to God and just by your coming saying, God, I want to be that person who prays like I've never prayed before, who believes in you for things I've never believed before. Maybe there's some people you've given up on. There's some problems you've given up on. And would you just put that on this altar and say, God, when I go back to my seat, I'm leaving it with you. With you, all things are possible. Forgive me for giving up. Forgive me for quitting and just assuming that my situation was impossible for Almighty God. God, help me to live as people of faith. Don't ever let me walk away and leave a boy still on the ground in bondage because I just gave up and quit on someone who needed me to believe in you. So I'm going to give you just a moment. Now I'm going to pray for you, and we'll be done soon.